This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Good evening. Good Sunday evening. This is Love Sport Radio, and I am Matthew Beadle, and that is Zed Cars, which means one thing and one thing only. It is, of course, the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport. We are going to try and be positive, as we always want to be on this show. However, things aren't looking too good. Let's just run through a few stats, shall we? Of course, the 2-0 victory at Wolves yesterday leaves Watford as the only team without a victory in the Premier League this season. The club have conceded 12 goals in three league games since Quique Sanchez-Flores returned to replace Javi Gracia in September, earlier on this month, of course, and that is now 11 league games without a win. I hate to say it, but that is the worst run since the 99-2000 campaign. And we all know what happened that season. Yes, indeed. It was relegation from the top flight. If you want to join the debate on this Watford Fan Show, it's very easy to do so. 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us, believe it or not, on that number. And you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. But right now, it's time to talk to a fan who was at the game at Molineux yesterday. Jerry Liddell is here. He's also a member of the EA Horn supporters group as well. Jerry, thank you for joining us.
Hi, mate. You all right?
Yeah, good, thank you. Liddell, did I get that right? Liddell rather than Ladle.
Yeah, right. You got it right, surprisingly. Good. Most people don't.
Most people go with Ladle.
They do, yeah.
Terrible. I bet there's a gag in there somewhere. We're going to brush right past it. But
good man.
You were at the game yesterday. I've started the show by saying it's tough times. We want to be positive. But that was a difficult one to watch, no?
It was, yeah. I mean, I was at Man City the week before and, well, we all know what happened there. And you were looking for a response. I know they did pretty well against Swansea, but different team, wasn't it, really, that they put out? And I don't know if you remember about 11 months ago, we played Bournemouth at home and got smashed. Went to Wolves the next week and really put on a show. 11 months later, we've been smashed by Man City, gone there. And there just seemed no confidence. That's what concerned me more than anything. You know, the effort was there, but it was just lack of confidence. It was really hard to understand what sort of strategy they were trying to play. You know, what formation? Well, the formation was clear enough, but it was just, what were they actually trying to do? Because we just didn't seem to have a threat at the top. It was a bit of a worrying watch, to be honest.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because you look at Quique on the sidelines. This is a gaffer who, I don't know, from the time that I saw him previously in his previous spell with Watford, he's not the most, I don't know, animated coach on the sideline, I suppose you could say. So you never quite know what's going through his mind. You never quite know if he's angry, if he's unhappy. I mean, the love in between him and Nuno, both before and after the game, was there for all to see. I mean, they seem to be friends, but Nuno obviously left far more happier than Quique. He had that impact, the manager bounce, as you could say, but it still didn't result in a win. It resulted in a brilliant comeback against Arsenal. But since then, we know about the Man City game. We can kind of let that one slide. And if we can take any positive from yesterday, it is that at the time Matt Doherty scored, this time last week, you were 5-0 down. So, I don't know. We have to look at the pros, right?
Well, we do. But, you know, to be fair, he scored in the 18th minute. They had a couple of decent chances before that where the Wolves had gone with a plan. They knew what they had to do. They knew we're not the fastest at the back. And why we were playing such a high line, that sort of raised a few question marks in my mind, because it just gave them room to gallop into behind. And they got behind us a couple of times before that, put one across, and I thought the guy had scored, but he just scuffed it wide. And then the goal, well, Hollabaugh, I'm sorry, but I don't know what he was doing, whether he was ball watching or picking something out of his shorts, I'm not sure, but he just stood there and let the guy just go past him. He got 3 yards past him, and then decided to go in, and, well, it was a tap-in, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a tap-in. And the second goal as well, I mean, when your luck's out, your luck really is out, isn't it?
I mean, it's just one of those, you know. I think there's obviously, he didn't intend to put it where he put it. I think he was trying to just flick it on over anyone behind him and just got it all so wrong. because we had quite a lot of possession second half, but we didn't really threaten. I mean, I have to say, though, if there was a positive out of it, Welbeck, was, I thought, was excellent. He was feeding off scraps the whole time, but he was always active and chasing, you know, lost causes to a degree, you know, but he created a couple of chances, made one save out of the keeper, and then there was the mess up that cleverly, you know, where it just the keeper sort of threw it into him, and just, that could have gone in, and it could have gone anywhere really.
Mm.
But you know, that's really, we didn't deserve anything out of the game at the end of the day. I don't think anyway.
It's a tough one, Jerry, because what are we identifying here? Because when you look at the side, and this is what you tend to do when you look at the clubs who are struggling in the relegation zone, if we can call it that, after so few games already of the season.
Yeah.
But Ben Foster, right? So a top goalkeeper in the Premier League, had he not retired from international duty, he'd probably still be in the reckoning. We go to the opposite end of the pitch. Diolofeu, a class player. Pereira, obviously, a very decent player. You've mentioned Danny Welbeck, who's plied his trade with United and Arsenal and is quite clearly a top player. England international as well. Got a new signing, Ismaël Assar, a record signing there. Kapoue Doucouré. Mm. And then kind of when you look at the lineup above that, that's perhaps where it starts to slightly fall down. You've already talked about Hollabas. We know about the defence. Daryl Yanmat is a decent player, but is not enough to hold a defence together. Then you've got Dawson. Then you've got Cathcart. And Tom Cleverley, look, we still, for me, the jury is still out as to whether he is going to be a top English midfielder in the Premier League. But then, you know, I say the jury's still out. He's now approaching 30 years old. So what are we identifying as the main issue here?
Well, for me, I think this season, Doucouré's not played, really. I mean, he had a fairly decent second half against Arsenal when the whole team seemed totally energised. But a lot of the performances, as far as I'm concerned, have been a bit below, well, quite a way below par. And unfortunately, for the last couple of weeks, I also think Kapu's probably not had his best couple of games, which is a bit of a shame, because he has been our standout player. There's no question he's consistent, but he seems to, I don't know if, what the issue is there. Maybe it's just one of those things where he's had a bit of a bad run. But the last couple of games, I don't think he's really sort of been the Kapu that we know and love.
And it is mad when you look at the stats as well, Jerry. I know that we live in an era of stats now and you can't read too much into them. But like you say, 61% possession, 14 shots. Wolves only had six. Two of their shots were on target, which they kind of scored with, I suppose you could say, if you can count the last one as a shot. But when you look at the record that I alluded to at the start, that's 11 Premier League games now without a win. The fourth side to concede as many as 20 goals after the opening seven Premier League games of a season. Often when you hear these stats, like you used to hear with Derby when they had that terrible season, we heard it all about Fulham last season. Both of those teams went down. Are you, so early in the season now, is there a slight concern at Vicarage Road that relegation could potentially be looming?
I personally think it's far too early. But having said that, I have to admit as well, I was okay. Even after the 8 at Manchester, but I was hoping for a bounce back yesterday and a bit of a reaction. And, well, 2-0, it's not a massacre, is it? And as you say, you know, we have more possession. We can really have too many shots on target, I don't think. And Welbeck had one and a couple of others, long range, but straight down the keeper's throat, really. We just seemed to, whether it's confidence or what, I don't know, but that final third, there just didn't really seem to be too much going on, or there was never a real threat. And I think even all the Watford fans there yesterday couldn't, even once they had scored, you thought, oh, now we're going to get back into this, the way they had actually started. And there just seemed no urgency. Even when it went to 2-0, we didn't, right, well, we could lose three, or we may get back to 2-1, and then who knows what happens. Yep, they might start buckling, you know, especially after what happened at Wembley. But it just didn't materialise at all. I think it's too early to get too worried at the moment. But on the other hand, you can't get complacent and think, oh, yeah, we'll be all right, we'll sort this out. They've got to work very, very hard. And Kike's got to earn his corner, I think. in the next few weeks.
Indeed, they have to work hard. And Etengpua, who you mentioned there, obviously said after the game, you know, we are not lazy people. We're pushing each other, which is a good sign, and we need to keep going. Mm. I love how footballers also say, this is football. You tend to get that from footballers and managers when they don't win a game. Well, that's football. Sometimes these things happen, but we know we will get points real soon. We obviously hope that will be the case. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you coming on the line today.
No worries, mate.
And we'll speak to you again soon. That was Jerry Liddell, Watford fan, who was at the game yesterday, of course. A somber atmosphere, I should say, in the away fans' end there for Watford. Jerry, of course, is a member of the EA Orns supporters group. We'll be speaking to him again sometime too on the Watford Fan Show here on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport Radio. I am Matt Beadle and you are listening to the Watford Fan Show. If you want to join the debate, very easy to get in touch. 0208 70 20 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well or tweet us if you dare at Love Sport Radio. Delighted to say now that we like to look at ex-players and speak to ex-players and find out what ex-players are doing in their life post-Watford. And Dominic Blizzard is now on the line. Of course, played for Watford between the years 2002 and 2007, mostly under Aidy Boothroyd. That tenure, of course, Richard Lee was at the club as well. Dom, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Thank you for joining us. I mentioned Richard Lee there, of course, Love Sport royalty, who kind of gets crowbarred into every single Watford conversation that we tend to have on the show. But this isn't about him. It's not about Richard Lee. It's about you, Dom.
It's all about him. Oh, that's nice. Nice for once.
Firstly, just a quick word on Watford as things stand. We just had a fan, Jerry, on the line. He's not suggesting that relegation is looming just yet. It's very early in the season. But what's your take on the season so far for the Orns?
To be honest, I think it's the form of towards the end of last season. I think that was a little bit dire, and it's you know, carried on through the beginning of this season. The thing in the Premier League is it's very difficult to win, you know, two or three games on the trot. So you don't really want to be too far behind before you start picking up the wins. Obviously, the new old manager has come back. It's going to be difficult. They've got a big game at Sheffield United, I think, is the next game at home.
Yeah, massive one.
That's vital that they get the 3 points there, I feel, because you see it happen before where, you know, before Christmas, like you've got no chance because you're so far away from the other teams. I mean, I don't think that will happen because I think Watford have the quality, but you just never know. You get off to a bad start in the Premier League and you're just playing the chasing game. It's so difficult.
As a player, Dom, and listen, I don't know how much of it you experienced when you were at Watford, but as a player, are you aware of the pressure? Do you let it get to you? You mentioned the fact that this clash with Sheffield United next week is huge, and it's incredible that so early in the season, we're already looking at games going, wow, that is almost a six-pointer. Of course, Sheffield United lost at the weekend to Liverpool, so they're down there, but they looked very good. Watford, in contrast, against Manchester City last week did not look particularly good. They were bowled over by one of those top two. So as a player, will the players be aware of how important this game is next weekend?
Yeah, of course. The table, you know, they're right rock bottom at the moment, 2 points. You'll be looking around thinking, right, we need to get a win seriously as quick as possible under our belts and then go from there. Obviously, confidence won't be particularly high at the moment with the 8-0 against Man City as well, and then obviously they played Wolves, which is a difficult game at Molineux. You're just looking to build some confidence, like little steps, maybe keep a clean sheet, you know, and go from there. But I feel like if you're looking on paper, I mean, I know Sheffield United are a decent team and they've got a lot of fight in them, but you're looking at home, that's a game that you know they'll have to go all out to win. Because that's going to, as I said, confidence is so vital, especially in the Premier League, because you never know when your next win's coming from. But a home game is vital for them.
You also never know, Dom, where your first win is coming from. Watford, the only team now in the Premier League to not win a game. I guess that's something else that will play in the players' minds.
Of course, you know, you're not winning games, and it seeps into the team, the morale. Obviously, they've changed the manager. I don't know particularly how that might affect the dressing room, but from what I believe, you know, the manager that left has come back. Sanchez Flores is, you know, he was quite popular before, and you know, I don't think the 8-0 would particularly have helped, you know, his cause. Obviously, but being Man City, being one of the best teams in Europe, it's just building that confidence and getting them going. It's vital to get off to a good start. I mean, you look at Norwich, and they were saying, "Oh, Norwich are flying" a few weeks ago, you know, but slowly but surely they'll creep back in. You know, they'll be creeping back in, and all those teams that you think, "Oh, they're going to be all right." Premier League is unforgiving, and eventually the teams that you think are going to get relegated, they're usually the ones in and around, you know, after Christmas as well. You want to get off to a good start.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I was saying before you came on that actually when, and it feeds into exactly what you're saying there, when you start talking about these stats, for example, the fact that Watford are winless in 11 now, and that stretches to the back end of last season, you know, fourth side to concede as many as 20 goals after their opening seven Premier League games. The fact that no side has put the ball past their own keeper more in the Premier League since the start of last season. Just those kind of things. Ben Foster conceding 24 Premier League goals via own goals. You know, I know that he's played a lot of games and that's kind of law of averages and that is what it is, but only two other keepers have conceded more. And just to top it all off, and this is the most random one of the lot, I think, is that Kike is winless in his last 12 games on a Saturday. I know how ridiculous that is, but when all these stats start to compile and Watford sit bottom of the Premier League and they are without a win so far in seven games, and the unlucky seven games so far, you do just start to think, it's going to get harder and harder.
Of course. I mean, you know, they have a decent squad, Watford, you know. I think they have massively overachieved in the last few years, you know, essentially before they were a yo-yo team, you know. And they've consolidated in the Premier League, which is a very difficult task, you know, considering the size of the club, no offence. But, It's impossible to know that, you know, you're going to be all right. I mean, you see you've got teams like West Ham, that West Ham team that got relegated. They had so much quality. And, you know, there's no way that you can look at Watford and go, oh, yeah, they've got too much. You know, you've just got to play. You've just got to get into that winning habit and grow from there. But, you know, the more the performances aren't there and the results are showing that, then you're going to struggle no matter how good the players you have in your team. You know, it's confidence affects all teams, you know, at the top to the bottom. You've got to worry, even though it is very early days, and you've got to give the manager some time, at least like 6-7 games to like implement what he wants from the team. And then go from there. But, you know, they need to be winning. They need to be picking up some points and positive, like 3 points very soon. As I said, you don't want to be cut adrift.
Yeah, that is the problem as well. When you have a new manager come in, you do have to give him time. In terms of the quality that is there that you allude to, Dom, is any part of you surprised at where Watford are thus far? And also, again, you being an ex-player and having played at the club, and this isn't specific to Watford, this is just football teams in general, and being a player and being in that change room, when a team goes on a bad run, does unrest start to creep in whereby someone's thinking he's not pulling his weight, or perhaps he's not good enough to be in this side?
Yeah, 100% that happens. You know, from the manager to the players, there's just so much negativity, you know, in the press. People get dug out, people pointing fingers at each other. I'm not saying that this is going on in the Watford dressing room, I don't know, but generally I've been in relegation battles and it is tough, you know. You go out on a Saturday and you feel that, you know, that little bit of weight, you know, on your shoulders and the pressure that you desperately need those 3 points. And then you do start looking at the other teams and how they're doing, and then sometimes you're picking up points and you see the other teams are picking up points and you've literally not moved anywhere, you're still in the relegation zone, and you know, it just comes ongoing, you know, you just want to get above that relegation zone and start looking up the table instead of, you know. Definitely it's very tough. I've been in dressing rooms where, you know, we've obviously, as I said, in that relegation zone, and training has just come difficult. You can see like the manager's running out of ideas, and you know, comes very regimented, or we start working on more on fitness, and you can lose some players along the way. And yes, it's tough. It is tough.
Dom, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We're definitely going to get you on again because I want to delve deep into your career at Watford. There's so much to discuss. One particular incident being the fact that you were on the bench, I believe, as a sub-goalkeeper. We won't talk about that right now because I think it deserves more time. But
all right,
we will just get from you what you're up to now, post-football, as it were.
Oh, well, I've actually been, funnily enough, I finished football and then I went into acting, bizarrely.
Wow.
So I started getting involved in just so happened a friend of a friend, and then I got into a film, and then that's moved on, and I've done different things, you know, films. I also do, I'm also like writing my own kind of stuff as well. So yeah, that's basically what I've been doing, and I've just kind of fell into it really, since I finished. It was always something that I wanted to, you know, I looked at, I would love to do, and it, I just so happened the opportunity came and I've kind of run with it, you know. But yes, yeah, a really interesting, complex industry, and very difficult again, like football. But yeah, something that I really enjoy.
Crikey, Don, talk about going from a pressurised industry to another one. Hollywood on the horizon at all for you?
Not so much now. I mean, to be honest, I'm focusing on writing at the moment. You know, I did a few films, and you know, short films, this kind of thing, just to get some experience. And then it was always in my mind, even when I was playing, I used to write. I had something weird that I always used to do. I used to write like outlines for scripts and things like that. So I was always been obsessed with film, and yeah, and then I'm writing a few projects at the moment. One, hopefully, which might get made, on the horizon, possibly. We're looking into that at the moment. That's more of a TV show. And then, yeah, it's something that I've always dreamed of, and, yeah, something I'm pursuing, and we'll see where it goes.
Dom, amazing. Just an FYI, I was once an extra on The Inbetweeners, so I am available for castings. Dom, thank you for joining us, boss.
Good to know. Yeah, no worries. Take care.
That was Dom Blizzard, ex-Watford midfielder. Fascinating stuff there. We'll definitely get him back on the Watford... crikey. Perhaps I'm not available for auditions. Perhaps I'm not the best to be on Dom Blizzard's short film that he's going to produce. This is the Watford Fans Show on Love Sport.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Yep, it's Love Sport Radio. This is the Watford Fan Show. I'm Matt Beadle with you through until 11 p.m. this evening. Right now, we're talking about the Orns. And actually, after speaking to an ex-player in Dom Blizzard, we're going to hear now from another ex-player in Scott Loach, an ex-goalkeeper, in fact, because it's almost 11 years to the day, we missed it last week, of the infamous ghost goal on his debut for the club at Vicarage Road, Watford v Reading, the infamous ghost goal that Stephen Hunt, who was involved in the goal for Reading, described as probably the worst decision he's ever witnessed in football. Manager Aidy Boothroyd described it as like a UFO landing. We spoke to Scott about the anniversary of that goal and his career at Watford.
Watched it many a time, so I still explain to people that don't really know that one or ask me about my Watford career to look at that goal. And I still not seen one or come across one person that can kind of see what the referee's seen there. It was funny, actually, because I played with Stephen Hunt at Ipswich, and my first memory of him is just running off celebrating, which I really didn't agree with at the time. Even him himself didn't know what was going on. It's really confusing to talk about because it's just baffling. I think anybody watching it will, I can only imagine that the ref's gone off the word of the linesman and obviously trusted his judgment.
Well, this is it. I remember at the time, so it was obviously Mark Poom started the game and he got injured, didn't he? And that was obviously why you came on. So I remember I was actually in the change room with Poomy because he had done his collarbone, if I remember rightly, and he wasn't in a particularly good way. But then when I came back out and people were trying to explain to me what exactly had happened, and nobody could because it was so bizarre. And even now, as you say, the ball's gone off for the goal kick. You can only imagine that the linesman seen it go over the line and assumed it had obviously gone over the line in the goal. But even the whole situation, the fact that it was an attacking player that was then trying to keep the ball in play, you actually consider that even if it had gone over the line in the goal, why would an attacking player be trying to scoop it back out of the goal to bring it back into play? It just made no sense. It was big news, wasn't it, for a week or so. But for that to happen on your league debut, how did you deal with that afterwards?
I didn't really take it in at the time. I think, you know, when you're young, I think I could probably, this will probably speak for my whole first maybe year or 18 months, think you get by on adrenaline, don't you, a little bit? So you don't really analyse what was going on. So I was just excited to be out there, really. I just kind of wanted to prove a point. Because I actually remember my first goal kick. I must have kicked it about 10 yards as well, just out of pure nervous energy. And then that happened. And I think, I don't know if that might have, you know, kind of in a weird way settled me into the game. Because it was kind of thinking, well, nothing can really go any more wrong than what's happened. And then from there, I just kind of, I remember I made a save from Jimmy Kebbe afterwards. And I felt good during the game. And just kind of tried to put it to the back of my mind and not let myself worry about it.
And I remember that time quite well. From my point of view, and again, we've got different stories around that time, because I remember I had an injury in pre-season, if I remember rightly, and you came back flying and you played the cup game, and that was your debut, wasn't it, the cup game? And my memory from that was, obviously I knew quite a bit about you anyway, we worked together for a couple of years at that point, if I remember rightly, but it was the fact that you came back absolutely flying. You were nailing your side volley. That was my memory of the cup game. You must have had five towards the end of the game. Every one missile going into the corner. Beautiful trajectory. And you could tell that you had the bit between your teeth. And it was just a matter of time before you were going to get your chance. Of course, then when your chance did come, it didn't last too long. If I remember right, because then you got the injury against Sheffield United, didn't you?
Obviously, the year before, I think I'd gone to Stafford Rangers and Bradford. Got a taste of football, so I came back, you know, really, obviously it's a completely different step up being in the Championship, but I felt that I was ready to play. And then, it was just a simple save at Bramall Lane. I don't know if you can remember, I dived down to my right, and just the way I landed, my hip bone just seemed to cut the muscle clean off that attaches from your stomach to your hip bone. It was a really weird feeling, because I remember getting up and it felt like I had cramp in my stomach. And then I took the goal kick, and then, as you probably can remember, I just couldn't walk. I just couldn't get off the pitch. I think Rolsey and someone else, maybe Richard Collins, carried me off the pitch, and you know the agony I was in the changing room was horrible. And it was again like a really freak accident, but it was one that couldn't be helped. They put it down to my growing.
Absolutely. Well, look, let's talk Watford, which is what we were going to get onto. Obviously, you were there when Rich was there. You made 130 consecutive appearances from November 2008 to September 2011. You were an ever-present in the Championship for two campaigns. The Watford Observer, I noticed, although perhaps slightly biased, I suppose, did describe one of your performances against Plymouth at the start of a season as world class. You got the call up to the England under 21 side and you played in that European Championship final against Germany in 2009. Just tell us what that was like for you.
Obviously, the experience was unbelievable, and playing in the final, no one can never take that away from me. But I was definitely at fault for the second goal, which kind of killed us. And you know, if you look at Germany's team, the quality they had kind of stopped us getting back into the game. But overall, the tournament was incredible. It was great to be around, and some of the players that were involved for the England side, and then, you know, like I said, back to the Germany team, you had Neuer, Ozil, Hummels, players like that. You had Balotelli, Italy. You know, we had the Spain team, Raul Garcia in there. It was some good big players on show. So to be a part of the actual campaign was, you know, really, really good for me. I've got, you know, kept on my memorabilia from there, and the training kit is something that I look back on, and you know, will hopefully show my little lad when he's older. So it was definitely a proud memory of mine.
Yeah, indeed. I wanted to know like how you felt going into the final. Because if I remember rightly, obviously Joe Hart was the other goalkeeper and he had a pretty good tournament, hadn't he? I think he, in the semi-final, something rings a bell, I think he had a particularly good game, if I remember. So did you feel any particular pressure going into the final? What was the reason Joe Hart didn't play the final? Just remind me, was it a...
He got two booking. He got booked twice in the games leading up to it due to, right, you know, giving the striker some penalty. So in the semi-final against Sweden, he was, you know, he likes to shout at the penalty taker before they take it, and the ref booked him for it. So it was actually his second booking of the tournament. So he missed it. And obviously there was me and Joe Lewis in the squad. And we didn't actually know until the night before who was going to play. Like, we had no idea. It was a strange one. I was really excited. Sometimes now, even when I'm playing now, I'll be playing against Maidenhead or, you know, Hartlepool or Over, and I'll get nerves sometimes. But I remember at the time on that game, I had no nerves. I was just really looking forward to it. You know, I just thought it was an occasion that everyone would be watching, and I was playing for England, and to be out there was something that I could always look back on and say, you know, I've played in the European final.
Yeah, some names you mentioned there, obviously, in that final: Manuel Neuer, Mesut Ozil, Sandro Wagner, Mats Hummels, Sami Khedira, some world-class names there. And then a year later, you got that call up to the England senior squad. There were various circumstances, and we had Frankie Fielding on the podcast a few months back, and obviously he was the other goalkeeper that was there with you. He said it was quite a surreal experience for him going into that setup and going to eat breakfast with the likes of Wayne Rooney, who would actually introduce himself and be like, "Oh, hi, I'm Wayne, nice to meet you." And Frankie was very much like, I know who you are, mate. You don't have to introduce yourself. Was it the same for you, or did you just take it in your stride?
No, it was the same. It was surreal, but I kind of, you know, because I knew Joe Hart and, you know, Milner and some of the lad, Adam Johnson was in there, and some of the lads that had been to Kieran Gibbs that had been with the under-21s, it kind of made it a little bit easier. But I remember, speaking of Rooney, I remember, you know, I managed to get his top. He was great for me. And I remember one morning I sat down at breakfast with, obviously, with Joe Hart, Gary Cahill and Stephen Gerrard was there, and I just kept telling myself, right, this is big. You know, don't go back to your room. Just enjoy this moment. Don't walk away. Just enjoy it. So I was talking to Joe, and then Gary Cahill got up and left, and I thought, right, don't go. Don't leave. And then Joe Hart left, and then I was just sat face to face with Stephen Gerrard. I was thinking, wow, this is surreal. But he knew absolutely everything about football. He knew about Watford. He was just a really great guy. He stayed there for a good 5-10 minutes, talked to me as if I'd been there the whole time, and was just had a really good general conversation with him. And I think that was the first morning I was there, and that just made me feel like, well, if he can do that, I've got nothing to fear. And I guess that was him being a captain and a leader. Or, you know, you never know, it might have just been him as a person, but it really, really settled me in and made me feel really welcome.
I mean, it's a great story. It's interesting, though, isn't it, being in that position? I always remember when we made the Premier League, Eddie Boothroyd had a bit of a go at us because we played Manchester United, and after the game, everyone's swapping shirts with all the United players, and so we're all coming in with the different shirts. And I remember on the Monday, Eddie Boothroyd had a bit of a pop at us saying, like, look, you need to believe that you belong at this level. You can't be swapping shirts every game because it shows almost too much respect for the opposition. I guess in some ways, there must have been similarities where it's like, you're there, you deserve to be there. Your performances to that point had got you and given you that particular opportunity, but at the same time, you're in the same room as some incredible football minds, people that have played at the very highest level, great experience you can learn from. So how did you feel being in that environment? Was it quite a tough balance to find?
Yeah, if I'm looking back now, perfectly honest, I probably didn't believe that I did belong there. I was immature, not in a way that I acted like a kid, but, you know, in the way I'm just with the England squad. I instead of thinking, right, I'm here on merit or whatever, and what can I do to stay here? I probably kind of just rode the wave a little bit and just kind of went along, got along with it, instead of really making it kind of stick or really thinking to myself, right, I'm in here now, I want to be part of this, I've got a good chance. And maybe a bit of self-belief. It was kind of just like, oh, let's just kind of do this and see where it takes us, instead of actually thinking, right, I'm here now, let's make it stay, if that makes any sense.
We've since heard, Scott, and actually we spoke to Paul Robinson as well, who didn't have great things to say about Fabio Capello, I guess you could say. We've since heard from a few players that they weren't hugely enamoured with his methods, his man management with his players whilst he was England boss. Did you notice anything when you were there at the time that the feeling in the camp wasn't that of a hugely positive mood?
I didn't really pick up on that. I couldn't believe how little was said, really. You know, like before games or after games, and it was kind of like, You could get the feeling that, I don't know if he took to the players and the players didn't really take to him, if that makes any sense. It was, I remember sitting in the changing room before thinking, right, what's going to be said? Everyone was just getting ready and went out for the warm-up. And then afterwards, you know, I didn't really see him. That was the thing I found weird. I just didn't see a lot of him on the whole time I was away. I spent most of my time with Ben Foster or Joe Hart, and, you know, the goalie coach. And I just remember the outfield players doing your possessions and your small-sided games. I didn't really actually see. You know, I could be wrong, I could have turned a blind eye to it, but that's one of my memories looking back, that I didn't really see too much interaction with Capello and the players.
You touched on Ben Foster there, of course, someone that you got to know well at Watford as well. He was a big influence on you back then, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I still think he's one of the best I've ever seen in the flesh, and I think he's another one that I think he's got so much natural ability that I think he could be anything he wants. I think he's so good as a goalkeeper. I think as a person as well, I think his mental strength and, you know, obviously I don't know the inside and outside, but looking from where I am, I think how he deals with things, and he just seems to smile no matter what happens. And I always go back to the Paul Robinson goal, and I think even though Paul Robinson scored and they were battling for the England number one spot, Ben seemed to come out a bit better off with the way he reacted. And I always look at the stuff that he does and how he deals with things, and I still try and, you know, implicate that now in my own game, because I think if you're enjoying yourself then, or you're happy, then it could speak into performances as well.
So when you got that call up, you said you were away with England in 2010. It was at the height of your Watford career. Like I said, you'd made consecutive appearances. You were an ever-present for two campaigns at Vicarage Road. We had Andrew Lonergan on the podcast. And we mentioned to him that when he was at the height of his career with Preston, there was talk of a potential move to Arsenal in the Premier League. That never materialised. But for you, when you were at the height of your career with Watford, it was the other side of North London, wasn't it? It was Spurs, and a potential move that almost came off at the time for you.
Yeah, I think were you at the club, Richard, then?
Yeah. I remember Deadline Day very well.
Yeah, I remember. I didn't really know too much about it. And we had Sky Sports News, I think, in the room, and it came up on there in the cafeteria. And obviously, then Malky and Shane Bailey took me to the office and was like, look, we don't want you to go, we want you to keep playing. And, you know, I felt really wanted at Watford. And I was only young. And in the back of my mind, well, in the front of my mind, it was just like you're at a good level. You're young, you're playing. You've had this kind of success so far. So I didn't, you know, Richard knows my personality. I'm not the kind of guy that kicks up a fuss or I don't really get angry or, again, maybe a little bit. Looking back, you can say I could have forced the issue and you never know where my career could have gone down that route. But I was just, again, happy just to go along with things and just keep playing and enjoying where I was at the time.
And you're right. No, you know, I do know your character very well and how you react to things. Looking back now, would you have done anything differently around that time? And I say that sort of based on my own experience as well, where the more realisations I've had in regards to football and the cliche strike when the iron's hot, you know, you realise that there's so many lows in football. When you have those highs and you have that little bit of momentum, you see people that seem to jump at the right time and they always take that little leap forward and manage to maximise their potential. Do you look back and think, oh, maybe I could have done something different?
I definitely think, looking back, whether it's because I've gone to learn on what's gone on in my career and learn how football works, I think I would have definitely tried to pursue it or force the issue a little bit more to at least let me speak to Tottenham, because, you know, I always look at Carl Darlow as an example. When he was at Forest, he probably had a similar kind of career to me, as in one, maybe two seasons at Forest, and then went and got a big move to Newcastle. And then you kind of look back and think, oh, I want a piece of that. Do you know what I mean? And looking at it now, Tottenham's such a big club and Premier League, and I think it'd be silly to not say that you would have liked it to happen. So I think, you know, if I could have my time again, I don't regret anything I've done, if that makes any sense. But I think the opportunity to go and play at a big club or definitely be around a big club, I think I definitely would have tried to force the issue or at least had the conversation with Tottenham and seen what could have happened.
There's the cross. Loach waiting for it. And it's a great save by Loach. It's a wonderful piece of goalkeeping. Odichai got a header on it, Loach saw it late and did enough.
As it turned out, Scott, it was then a couple of years later after that England call-up that you did eventually depart from Watford. And I think one of the things when looking over your career and various interviews that you've given that strikes me is that you're always very honest. You've already mentioned it on this podcast that you're very honest. And just looking at some quotes that you gave towards the end of the 2010-11 season where you said that perhaps your performance had dipped off a little bit, and you said, you know, instead of playing four good games and one bad game, you were very in and out. You had one all right game and one bad game, and you were really honest about the fact that you wanted to improve. You said, there's no point in me lying to myself. I set targets. I want to get five solid performances before an international break, and then I want to come back and I want to go again. In terms of that improvement and life under Sean Dyche, who came in as Watford manager, and I know that he brought in Thomas Cusack on loan for you, what was that like as a learning curve for you, having been Watford's number one and being called up to the England side and then the tide just slightly turning a bit?
At the time, obviously, I was human. I'm not going to lie. I was thinking, well, you know, what are you doing? I think that's because I'd been used to just playing. But then as I got to know Thomas, and he was so good with me. He was unbelievable with me. Can't speak any more highly of. He was very, very good with me. And he said he looked at some of the games before he joined Watford. He kind of stripped it all down and kind of said to me, go back to basics. You're kind of trying too hard. And I did feel like I was trying to, you know, if we were winning 1-0 and I had nothing to do, I wanted to go and do that thing to contribute to the game instead of just doing my job. And he kind of simplified it for me. And it was probably the best thing that happened to me. And I was definitely ready for a break at that time at Watford. I played all them games on the bounce. And I think mentally I was just, my performances wasn't there. They weren't consistent enough. And so when Thomas came in, it gave me a chance to just kind of sit back and have a look at it all. And I'd like to think it kind of worked for me a little bit.
Just on that note, so it's an interesting comment that you said, like, you were ready for a break. Obviously, you had a large number of games in a row. I mean, you know, I was checking the stats earlier, you played a hell of a lot more than I did for Watford over your time there. You know, a lot of games in a row. You said you were ready for a break, and you touched on the fact that mentally you're ready. Was that like lack of motivation? Was it a feeling that you'd stood still? Was there anything in particular that you can remember where you felt a little bit mentally fatigued and felt that you needed that break?
I think it was, we played Tottenham in the FA Cup. I think I remember playing, I can't remember what it was, Tottenham or Cardiff, you know, within the space of a week, and there was a game in between. And I remember being at fault for a goal in the Tottenham game, definitely Cardiff late on. And it was after that I was thinking, this is tough, you know, that's when I first remember really starting to get nerves. I remember sat down, I think it was Doncaster at home, because I remember saying to Chambo, like, you know, this, I've never been nervous before in my life, but now I'm playing against Doncaster and I'm nervous. And that's when I thought, you know, maybe I need to take a little step back and have a little look at it. You know, I think I was just overthinking things. You know, when a shot was coming, I was thinking, right, I need to parry this, or I was misjudging it. And, you know, instead of kind of just thinking, like, keep the ball out of the net, just be solid. Kind of, I was just overthinking everything that came in and around the box, and then I was always thinking, you know, don't put that cross in, but, you know, and stuff like that. So I kind of went a little bit, well, I wouldn't say lack of motivation, I just getting a little bit negative about, you know, my thoughts and stuff like that, if that makes sense.
That does. I mean, it's I talked to some of my goalkeepers about this now, it becomes a vicious cycle, because of course then the negative thoughts will lead to more negative feelings, you know, and of course each thought releases a chemical in your body, so with each negative thought you're making yourself feel worse and worse, which naturally is making you think worse and worse. And that's kind of, I suppose that's the hardest bit. It sounds like we've got so many similarities to when we were younger, and I had a similar period of time at Watford myself, and sounds like a similar conversation with Malky myself as well at some point, because yeah, you get to that, and then that is where that break just allows you to switch off for a period of time and actually almost reassess and reevaluate what it is and why you're playing the game. That was it for me anyway. And then obviously when I came back at Brentford, I felt that much better, because it was a fresh start. But not even the fresh start, it's a fresh mind, I think would be the expression I'd look for, where you're going into a game with excitement, the thought of playing in front of a crowd, the thought of making a great save, contributing in the way that you know you can, maximising what it is that you can offer, rather than worrying about things that are out of your control. And I was the same. I remember games at Watford where it was a case of almost praying they wouldn't put across an in-swinger on me when it was wet, windy and cold, you know, praying that it'd be 7-8 yards out so I didn't have to come, which is crazy to think now. But at that period of time, when your mind isn't in the best state of mind, yeah, you're reliant on luck to get through games.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I actually remember bumping into Fozzie on a night out of Leamington, funny enough, and he was like that. He was kind of just saying, you know, you've got to, your negative thoughts will, you know, make bad things happen. Like, if you look at keepers that are positive, I mean, everyone speaks about David James, but the one thing with him, he was brave and he was coming no matter what, whether he missed it or... And I think sometimes you create your own luck, and I felt that because I was being so negative, I was letting things go in that I was thinking, oh, you know, that should really not be going in. And that's kind of where I found myself towards that last couple of months at Watford.
That was Scott Loach speaking to the Goalkeepers Union, which you can now hear on Love Sport at 8 p.m. every Saturday night. Some fascinating stuff there, from the ghost goal against Reading on his debut, of course, to the England call-up, to then his gradual decline, I suppose you could say, at Watford before he moved on to Ipswich. Now at Barnet, we wish him all the best. Maybe we'll get him back on the show sometime. It's the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport. We're nearly done.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport. You are listening to the Watford Fan Show. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes left, and we're going to be reflecting a little bit more on that defeat to Wolves yesterday, talking a bit more about Kike Sanchez-Flores, whether he's the right man to take Watford forward, and looking ahead, of course, to that crucial, the crunch clash with Sheffield United next weekend. On the line now is Watford fan Joel Canning, and former academy player, of course, for Watford, Joel Canning. How are you doing, Joel?
Yeah, I'm very well. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thank you for coming on the line this evening, on this Sunday evening. Let's just discuss that game against Wolves yesterday and the mood around the camp now, especially from the fans. There's a great article on the BBC, of course, which has flirted with the idea that Kike Sanchez-Flores is focusing on training performances, perhaps being better than matches. He's saying that the guys are better at training at that London Colney training ground. He's working very, very heavily to try and sort out what he's describing as a mess. He skimmed through, apparently, the defeat to Manchester City, didn't really see it as productive to speak to the players about that rather than embarrass them. Let's move forward. Obviously, there was a defeat this weekend. What's the feeling now amongst fans about Kike?
I think at this point we've got no option in terms of a transfer window or any kind of personnel changes that can come in. He's obviously got a really good reputation as a great tactician and a great defensive coach. And from my perspective, looking at his career, I thought he did massively at Valencia and Benfica, and he always was really good at steadying the ship. I think it's really early days still, and he's obviously come into a real mess. You know, our form going into the end of last season was poor. Starting this season isn't great. And I think all of the work he can do now is just on the training ground, really, and leading up to next week's fixture, which is absolutely huge now. There's no other option other than to put the groundwork in on the training ground and sort out this defensive shape that clearly isn't working, the morale's low, and the fullbacks are clearly kind of switching off, which is leaving us exposed, and you know, we're conceding really sloppy goals. That's the only option I think we've got at the moment. I don't think we can make any further changes. I saw some people on social media today saying, oh, one or two more bad results and we're going to have to make another change. And that can't be the way. We need to steady the ship and kind of rally around together, I think.
Yeah, it's very much a case of committing to what Kike can offer at the moment. But I suppose when you look at the stats, that's 12 goals the club have conceded in the time that he's been there. It's now 11 matches since the last Premier League win. I mentioned earlier in the show that the last time that happened was in the 1999-2000 season. They, of course, got relegated that year. But listen, when you look at the squad, the players do seem to be there. It really does seem like once this defence mess, as Sanchez has described it, not particularly just defence, but the situation at the club at the moment, is sorted out, with a world-class goalkeeper like Ben Foster in goal, hopefully things will start to look better.
Yeah, I agree. The only issue for me is that if you look at any other Premier League team, would any other side take any of our defensive players? And other than maybe Ben as a keeper, I don't think they would. So, you know, those personnel, if you look at the players like Cathcart, like Dawson, and, you know, Hollabass is ageing, Janmaat as well on the other side. You know, these are players that are going to have to get a tune out of now going into a really kind of busy period. We've got three home games coming up in quick succession. But the personnel isn't great. The morale's low. He's got to do something. And looking at his history as well, I know that he's often favoured a kind of an anchor man, holding midfielder. It might be an opportunity to change the system slightly and have somebody there to kind of shore things up at the back, or even possibly going to a back three with wing backs, and that way they've got a little bit more support.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned those games coming up, Sheffield United being the first of those. I mean, listen, that is a huge game. Obviously, you go to Tottenham after that, but then it's AFC Bournemouth. That game against Sheffield United is massive. How do you see that one going, Joel?
They've been playing superbly, and you know, apart from a keeper error yesterday, they would have got a result. They've already proved themselves to be a really great kind of counter-attacking team, and they've got a few different systems they play where they do go direct, but they also counter-attack using wingers and inside forwards really, really well. I think really we need to start next week's game positively, and we've not of late. You know, we've not managed to get an early lead. Even looking back at the Arsenal fixture the other week, where we did come back really well. You know, it took a couple of goals down before we started playing, and we need to get on the front foot. We need to get an early goal. We need to get the crowd kind of behind the team. And that just hasn't happened of late. And you know, we've got to turn it around very, very quickly.
Yeah, indeed. The atmosphere at Vicarage Road is obviously huge. Presuming you'll be attending for these crucial home games, Joel?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the next few weeks is make or break. And yeah, it's worrying times, but I have faith.
You have faith. Joel Canning, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate you coming on tonight.
Thank you.
That was Watford fan and former academy player Joel Canning, who is hoping for better times at Vicarage Road. He will be there in the stands cheering his team on when they face Sheffield United next week. A massive, massive game for the Hornets, that one is. And a big one for Sheffield United as well. This has been the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport for another week. We'll be back next Sunday at 7 p.m, hopefully to dissect a victory over Sheffield United. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.